Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler, your host at the Mark Kohler Show, talking about saving taxes, building wealth, making more money, trying to hold it all together, protect our assets, all the above. So glad you're here with me. Appreciate you spreading the good word and letting people know about the show. And we just continue to grow and more listeners around the country, around the world. Thank you so much. Now, I may have a cough here or there or sniffle. I'm kind of under the weather, but I can't skip my show. I love being here with you. And on that note, I think to show this ongoing dedication and excitement, we are going to be having our 400th live radio show. I'm going to confirm it here. I think it's in 2 weeks, but I'll get you the exact date. It's either next week's show or the 2 weeks following. And it's going to be good. Got a special guest that day, and we just continue to rock and roll. So thanks for many of you that continue to listen every week. We're trying to dig up topics and guests that can share insightful comments and thoughts that will help you and change your life. So welcome. Now, I'd like to just hit a few important points. Of course, it's tax season. Woo! Hopefully many of you have at least started gathering your data. You don't have to file by April 15th. I've said it time and time again. Don't worry about that. Let's file an extension if needs be, and we can certainly be of help there. But it is tax time, and so things are a little more busy and stressful around here, of course. But please give us a holler if we can be of help. We've got April 15th next week, big deadline, and for as many of you know. So get your extension filed if needs be. I wanted to highlight the newsletter. Today's newsletter is packed with the information for our radio show guest who will be joining us here a little later. And we're going to be talking about getting into college, paying for it, writing it off, saving for college, all that good stuff. We've got several experts and guests that will come on and share some thoughts and insights on that. I've got a number of articles on the topic. Matt Sorensen has written an article on there as well on the savings strategies for college. And so we're going to talk about that today. That's it. So please, if you have a question or a comment, please jump on the chat line. If you're listening on your computer, you can type something up. Or if you would like to email me a question or a comment regarding the topic of the show, please do so, mark@markjkohler.com. And also, if you'd like to make a live comment, please do by just pressing the number 1 if you're dialed in on your phone and give us a live comment. We'd love to have you. So lots of power-packed information on the newsletter. If you're not getting the newsletter on a regular basis, there's the deadlines, another video, and 4 to 5 articles that can definitely be helpful to you. And we try to tailor those topics or kind of group those topics each week based on our radio show topic. So good stuff. So I'll come back to this. I'll introduce our topic a little more fully as we get ready to have Harry Kisker join us from the ESM Group, Strategic College Counseling. Excited to have him here with us. So I'll introduce him and the topic a little more fully. But until then, let's just jump to one of our regular tipsters, experts on the line. We've got Matt Sorensen, who's been traveling the country coast to coast, talking about his book and IRAs and self-directing. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Excited to be on for this topic. I got my own kids stressing about how I'm going to pay for college, so timely topic for me, too.
Yeah, I'll tell you, as a parent, I know some of you may not even feel it should be your duty to pay for your kids' college. We're open to those comments as well. I sometimes wake up and go,
position.
Yeah. I've been...
Sorry, Mom, if you're listening.
Yes. Yeah. I've been kind of stressing about it and thought several mornings this last few months I've woke up going, why am I paying for this crap? I'll get them a car, get them into school, and then they can go get a job and pay for most of it. So we'll see.
Yeah.
It'll be a little tougher on them than I think they expect. So, Matt, you got an article on this today. What were you thinking?
Yeah, so, I've been looking at this myself, and this is something clients of mine are obviously considering all the time as well, is how do you save for college in this certain type of tax-favored accounts that are out there. There's the Coverdell account or the 529 plan account, two different types of tax-favorable accounts you can use to save for college. They have lots of pros and cons, many that I didn't even address in my article because, frankly, there's so many different perks that can come with the accounts. But they kind of break up into those two different types, though, Coverdell accounts or 529 plan accounts.
Yeah, I think those are two that most people think of when they're going to save for college. And we're going to be talking about that as a huge subset of today's topic. But they're very different, aren't they? I mean, they're not they have really different benefits.
Yeah.
Which one do you lean towards? Which one do you like?
Well, I like the 529 for
really?
Me being in Arizona. Now, if I was in California, I would like the Coverdell, and let me explain why. The Coverdell account, you do not get any tax deductions or tax benefits, you do not get any tax deductions for putting money into the account. Now, the money does grow tax deferred, and it comes out, so there's no taxes as you're earning income in the account in a Coverdell. There's no money when the money is spent on higher education expenses, and this could include room and board, tuition, a laptop, books, that type of stuff. When the money is used for education expenses, it comes out totally tax-free. So you get some tax-free growth. The money comes out tax-free, but you're not getting any contribution on what you put in. Now, what I do like about the Coverdell accounts, these are also sometimes called ESA accounts, education savings accounts, is they can be invested in whenever you want. You can buy stocks and bonds with it. You can buy mutual funds if you wanted. You can even self-direct it. And I have a lot of clients that self-direct these Coverdell accounts for their kids' savings for college. So that's the primary reason I like the Coverdell accounts is you can pick what you want to invest into. Again, no tax deduction on the way in, but it does grow tax-free, and money comes out tax-free when used for higher education expenses. That's the tax benefit of it.
Yeah, and I should say one of the you hit all the positives. I don't even want to repeat them. Those are fantastic. That's a fantastic summary. But one of the drawbacks that always surprises me is that it's $2,000. You can only have $2,000 put away for you. Now, Grandma could put it in, and Grandpa, or you could put it in your own, but you can only have one account set up for you. Now, the deadline is coming up next week for the $2,000 contribution for last year. And then you could turn around and put another two in. So you can have $4,000 in each one of your kids' accounts and then self-direct it. But it is limited.
Yeah. And there are, keep in mind, there are some higher income phase-outs. However, there's some kind of ways around that in that you can gift money to the child, and the child can make the contribution. Now, for those of you who are familiar with IRAs, you might be thinking, well, doesn't the child have to have earned income? No. The Coverdell rule does not require that. So I don't even know, frankly, why they have this income limitation on the Coverdell accounts, because the child, so long as the child doesn't exceed the income limits, which is obviously rare, they can always contribute. So if you ever looked at these and thought, I phase out, I make too much money, I'm not going to get the benefit of using these accounts, don't worry. You just give the money to the child, have the child make the contribution, and you can get the money in.
Which comes to one of the strategies we'll probably talk about a little bit today that I want to focus on is putting your kids on payroll, because you could take the tax write-off for having them on payroll, and they could contribute to their own Coverdell. But so keep going. So now, compared to the 529, though.
Okay, now the 529, the reason I like the 529 is in certain states, you get a state income tax deduction for contributions made. There are 35 states that have a tax deduction or some type of tax credit for contributing to a 529. I have the link for a list in the blog of the states that offer that. Now, Arizona, for example, my state offers a maximum $4,000 tax deduction for married tax filers. So if I'm putting money into 529 accounts, I can get up to a $4,000 tax deduction on for Arizona income tax. Now, keep in mind, the Coverdell, I do not get any tax deductions for money put in. So that's a big plus for 529 accounts, is in most states, you do get a state income tax deduction or some type of state tax credit to incentivize you to put the money in. Now, the downside to the 529 account is you have no investment options. Essentially, what the 529 plans are is you're putting money into state-run or, the state contracts with some company who runs a fund type of investment that's very safe and secure, supposedly, and so you don't really have investment options. So the plus side, again, though, is you're getting the tax incentive of a deduction to get the money in. So if you contrast the Coverdell with the 529, the Coverdell, you have more investment options than the 529. But the 529, you get a deduction in most states. Now, that's why I said earlier, for me, I like the 529. Now, if I was in California like you, Mark, I would not like the 529 because California is one of those states that has no deduction or tax incentive to contribute to a 529. So if I'm in a state where there's no incentive to do that, or I'm in a state that has no income tax at all, like Texas or Florida, I would go to the Coverdell because the Coverdell has a lot more investment options. I'm not getting any incentive to go into the 529 and get a tax deduction in those states.
Man, I love it. And it's very, and you know, don't these different state 529 plans have different rates of return too? Because you're in a state
sure.
fund, aren't you?
Sure. And I don't want to get super complex on this, but you
yeah.
can actually, and even though you're a resident of one state, like I'm in Arizona, I could actually say I want to go into the Utah 529 plan fund because it may have a better rate of return or lower expenses or what have you. And there's different rules on how you can do that amongst the states. There's different states that say if you go outside our state and do some other state's 529, you can do that, but we're not going to give you the tax benefit here. Arizona is one state that says go to whatever state you want. We're still going to give you the tax deduction. They try and, you know, keep you here. I mean, they want to keep you here, but... So there's a mix out there on where you can go, but all of those 529 plans are kind of state-run funds. They're somewhat conservative and are going to have slow growth, but, you know, they're supposedly secure. So.
Well, fantastic comments. I know it's very, very tricky trying to choose the right vehicle. We're going to hear from Randy Lubke here, our licensed financial advisor, here in just a moment that'll give us a little bit more guidance from a financial investment standpoint. But these are tricky. Now, again, I just want to highlight this self-directing concept because
yeah.
we do have the author of the Self-Directed IRA Handbook. You can pull money out of a Roth IRA for education, but it's only penalty-free. You're still going to pay taxes when you do that. Isn't that correct?
Well, if you Roth IRAs, if set up in enough time, can be used to pull money back out. And I have a lot of clients who say the Roth IRA is kind of the best account because I can pull all my contributions out tax and penalty-free. However, you must have had the account for 5 years. Or if you converted, you must have converted the funds for 5 years. So if you said, well, I want to set up a Roth IRA for my kid, you could do that. You might want to set it up for them before they're 13 or so. They do have to have earned income for the Roth. But if they've had it for 5 years, then they can take money out penalty and tax-free.
For education.
Of their contributions, for whatever the heck they want. I mean, it's a,
yeah.
But their investment gains, they cannot. Those would be subject to penalty and tax.
Yeah. And it just seems a little too tricky. The Roth and college education, they're just not built for that. And
yeah.
I think people should really focus on that Coverdell IRA where you get tax-free growth and tax-free withdrawals if you want to self-direct something. Now, again, you don't get a deduction. Every state's a little different, too. But great comments, Matt. So I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us here today. Any final words on this college savings strategy and IRAs?
The last thing I'd say is if you're behind the eight ball, like me, you can also do both. So you can do a 529 and a Coverdell plan. So don't think you got to pick either or. You can do both.
Okay. I love it. Well, Matt, thank you so much, folks. That's Matt Sorensen, partner at KKOS Lawyers, runs the Phoenix office. And you can reach him at Matt, M-A-T, that's one T, at KKOSLawyers.com. Thanks, Matt.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Again, that's Matt, M-A-T, at KKOSLawyers.com. I'm going to talk to him about getting in the studio rather than running up and down stairs in a 10-story building while he's on the phone, because I'll give him a hard time later. There was a lot of feedback there. But we were grateful whenever we can grab him, because he's got a very busy schedule. Well, folks, now also on this topic of saving for college, I'm going to give the tax tip here in just a moment. We're going to be hearing from our expert that works in this area every day, educating people around the country. But that was kind of our self-directed IRA expert, Matt Sorensen, of course, that we had for a moment. I'd also like to get a financial advisor's perspective. And on a regular basis, we have Randy Lubke out of Newport Beach, California, phenomenal educator. He's an independent financial advisor, which I love because he's not beholden to anyone. But if you thought I had a lot of letters behind my name, he's a registered financial consultant, an investment advisor representative, a registered mortgage advisor. And then he's also a life insurance agent, a real estate broker, a mortgage broker, and a stock broker. So this guy, he's got all the credentials. I think he's spent more room taking tests than I have, and I'm sick of taking tests. So we're so grateful to have him when he can join us. Randy, are you there?
I'm sick of taking tests, too.
I bet you are. Jeez, I love it.
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks for joining us. Well, Randy, I know that you've been on, I shouldn't say, are you there? I wanted to make sure that I pushed the right button to bring you in from the studio, but I know you've been listening throughout the first part of the show. What are some of your thoughts of what Matt's been talking about with this 529 and Coverdell IRA?
Well, I think, you know, Matt really hit the nail on the head. You know, the key is, and I know you're going to talk about, you know, some tax methods here, but the key is, you know, when you think about college tuition and all the other stuff that goes along with it, right, is college tuition and room and board and the soft costs, transportation, computers, all that type of stuff, you're using money that I call 65 cent dollars. And just briefly what I mean by that is these are after-tax dollars. So if you make a dollar in income, you're going to pay, let's say, 25% to the feds and 10% to the state, so you're only left with 65 cents. And what that means, if you work it backwards, if you have tuition that's $50,000 a year, your real out-of-pocket cost is more like $77,000. It costs 54% more because you're using the 65% dollars. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a fantastic point. And I wanted to say this, too. Forgive me, Randy, for interjecting this point. If what we were talking about with Matt and what I know, Randy, you're leaning towards is, of course, a tax-deferred strategy. Folks, the best way in the world is if you can pay for college with pre-tax money, whether it's in this Coverdell or 529, where you may have at least at a state level got a tax deduction, or at a federal level you got tax-free growth and tax-free withdrawals. Now, if you can't get that, I'm going to talk about ways to get a tax deduction on that 65 cents. But you're right, Randy. I mean, you got to pay, a lot of times you got to pay taxes before you can even pay for college.
Well, almost all the time you do. So if you have a $100,000 education, you know, it's really going to cost you $150,000 to pay for it. And so really when people come to me as a financial planner and say, how do I pay for college, the first thing we have to decide is if we have time or if we don't have time. That meaning, you know, are your kids like under 12 years old? Then we have some time to plan, maybe even under 10, you know, again, to accumulate the money. But once they're past that 10 or 12, you don't have much time left to put the money together you need to pay for college. So your strategies are going to be completely different depending on the age of your children.
Yeah, No. Thank you, Randy. I need a cold, hard slap in the face this morning with my three teenagers. I appreciate that. But,
the truth of the matter is I'm through the other side. Now, I mean, I listened to you and Matt, and you guys got college coming up, and my kids are older, and I've been through it. So, and I see it, of course, every day with my clients, and it's just the reality of it. Things cost more. And the other reality is when you were young and you had your children, probably just like me when I was young and had my children, you don't have the money to set aside in general to put into a college savings fund. You're just finding the money you need to, you know, make your mortgage payment or save to buy the house. The timing doesn't generally work for people.
No, I hear you. And we're so excited to talk here in just a moment with Harry Kisker, who's going to be talking about financial aid, what can you do when you're up against the wall. I want to share some tax strategies here in a moment. But Randy, what are your what's your number one strategy, or two or three? I mean, it's probably a multi-pronged approach to really pay for that college expense if you're going to help your kids. What do you like to hang your hat on?
Sure. Well, you know, I keep coming back to this, but real estate really is a tremendous opportunity for people. It could be as simple as maybe getting a line of credit on your home or taking out a mortgage on your home to pay for your kids. And, you know, there's obviously negatives to that. But when I think of real estate, again, do I have time or don't I have time? Well, if I don't have time, meaning my kids are going to college sooner than later, then maybe purchasing a condo that they live in and at least getting, you know, some tax deductions, the kiddie condo type concept, or even college rentals, you know, owning rentals in college towns. Again, you're going to get some tax benefits, you know, potentially some appreciation, definitely some depreciation. Those things can work. But really, if I have time, the best solution is buying a portfolio of rental properties, because those rental properties will generate income. Those rental properties will provide equity that you perhaps could borrow out tax-free to pay for tuition. So now I'm using 100 cent dollars to pay for college tuition and letting a tenant pay for that college tuition as they pay back the loan. So, you know, I think real estate is a great strategy for funding college.
Well, excellent comments, and I'm a huge fan of that real estate strategy as well. From a tax perspective, even if you did save up for your kids' college, getting them involved in a small business such as helping manage the rental properties. In fact, I'll mention it a little more in depth right now. One of the key strategies is buying that one rental a year and start buying rentals where your kids are going to go to college. Or if you don't know where they're going to end up, the minute they decide where they're going to go to college, you may have them experience that dorm room, on-campus experience for that first 6 months or year, and you want to get them matriculated into school and start taking classes and get familiar with things. But once they get through that freshman year, I'm doing the same thing with my freshman in college. We're looking at rental properties in and around the college, and I want him living in these multi-unit rentals, or at least managing the rentals from the dorm room, so that we're creating some cash flow, he's getting some life experience, I'm getting a tax write-off to go visit the college campus area, he's getting write-offs to come home, because now we have a business relationship between me and the property manager, aka my son. So to get a little more specific, to put some details to that. Randy, it's so refreshing to have a financial advisor even bring up the dirty word of real estate, where it's all got to be stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. So it's really refreshing.
Well, and thanks. You know, and I know you got your main caller on, but I'll give you one last thing for the listeners, and that's, you know, a lot of times, you know, I'm a licensed life insurance agent, and life insurance has been a strategy that a lot of people have used over the years as well for college. And again, we don't have time to get into it, but I just want to say you got to really be careful, because a lot of the life insurance plans, if you will, are really designed more to sell life insurance than to really do the right thing for the family and for the, you know, the college funding piece of it. It's viable. It can be viable, but you really got to peel back the onion on it and make sure it's the right thing for you.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up. I didn't even put that in my newsletter today, that the concept of life insurance for education, because life insurance seems like it's getting sold for every possible strategy out there, and it's if an insurance agent can find a reason to sell it, they'll twist and turn until they can make it fit in that square, you know, hole. And it's really sad. Can life insurance work? Absolutely. You're building dollars in a cash deferred policy that you could borrow against for education, and that's going to be a big sales pitch. But folks, the type of insurance plan you get can be devastating and actually cost you far, far more than actually paying for any college at all. Get a second opinion. That's what I, when anybody comes to me and says, hey, Mark, I got this investment strategy and it's got insurance in it and I say, great, go to a separate person, that's not going to get commissioned based on what you purchase, and get their opinion. And a lot of times they'll even have me look at it or other professionals that don't have a vested interest in the policy. So, Randy, great comment there. I mean, life insurance is often oversold for college.
Yeah, like I said, it can work, and many times it really is the wrong choice. So you just got to look at your situation. Like all financial planning, everything is specific to, you know, your needs, your timing, your goals, your children, your income, your taxes. All these different things fit together, and then we come up with the right solution for you. So thank you.
Yeah, well, I love it. Well, folks, if you want to get a hold of Randy and get a second opinion, have a consultation with him on your financial plan and talk about saving for college and all the resources he can put to bear for your on your behalf. Randy, how do folks get a hold of you?
You can call me at 800-810-1736. That's 800-810-1736. And I'd always encourage people to go to my website as well, Mark. It's just got a ton of educational information, articles, videos. And the website is lifetimeparadigm.com. So a lifetime, LIFETIME, and paradigm, PARADIGM.com.
Okay. Well, thank you, Randy, for joining us. I appreciate it. I understand Harry is going to come on and tell us that college tuition prices are going down and that everybody is getting into college with lower test scores now. So I believe it's amazing news. So we're excited to hear from him. Being a little facetious there. You're probably wondering, Mark, are you really being okay? Anyway, Randy, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Folks, before we get to our special caller here, I do want to highlight a couple comments and highlight a couple strategies. And these are comments that directly relate to the newsletter that many of you should already be receiving. If you're listening to the radio show, you're getting that update every week. Please email me if you missed last week's newsletter or this week's newsletter. So you may be listening to this recording. Please email me, mark@markjkohler.com, and say, hey, Mark, can you forward me that newsletter on education? And I can just quickly forward it. Topic I just want to quickly hit is the tax deduction strategy, and there's really three of them. A lot of people say, well, Mark, I want to write off my education expenses, and we've got a question on the chat line, too, here. A couple of them I want to hit. But the lifetime learning credit, it can be up to $2,000 for any level of college education, whether it's undergrad or a master's or doctorate degree, but your adjusted gross income is going to potentially be a problem if you're the one paying for your student and you have high levels of income, so you might phase out. The American Opportunity Tax Credit is another one that can be up to $2,500. It does phase out again based on your level of income. I hit some of those details. And I on both of these, the Lifetime Learning Credit and American Opportunity Tax Credit, folks, it really is very easy to get your head around these. Just go to IRS Publication 970. IRS Publication 970 is a real help on getting tax, kind of understanding those two tax credits that can be a help with your college expenses. Now, one, I had a phone call from a client just 2 weeks ago where she said, Mark, I was at this cool seminar over the weekend, and they said I can hire my kids and pay for their college education and take a tax write-off. It's this 127 plan. I can't wait to do it. Let's implement it. And I said, I'm sorry, you've got an S corporation. You have LLCs for your rentals. You can't do a 127 plan without implementing a C corporation, and then it can only be for your children 21 years and older. She's like, ah. Why do they not tell us that in these little workshops? They make it sound so sexy, and what they're trying to do is sell these C corporations in Nevada or Wyoming or somewhere else, and then they leave town and they're not there to do your tax return. I highlight this in a little brief point or article in the newsletter. It's in my blog a year ago or so I wrote on it. But the 127 plan can be fantastic if you have a C corporation, and if you have kids in college, it can be a great way to write off up to $5,250, so $5,250, of another strategy of writing off college expenses. But you've got to be careful with it. And the C corporation, as many of you know, I've got a whole section in my book on the C corp versus S corp. The C corp can really bite you in the rear on the double taxation issue. So we've got to be careful implementing a C corporation just to get a write-off. Now, just quickly, there was a couple comments on the chat line. This is from Optimistic2. He says, if I'm going to school myself and taking classes that are part of a required curriculum for the license, real estate appraisal, are they deductible? And the answer is yes. If you're taking classes specifically to maintain your professional license as a dentist, doctor, chiropractor, realtor, contractor, appraiser, CPA, all attorney, all of those extra classes that you're taking to maintain your license are deductible, even if they are a college class, but it's you're using it for your continuing education. Now, if you're just going back to college for the heck of it, and it's not being used for your continuing education, for your license, we're going to have an issue taking that tuition as a deduction in your business without going over to the Lifetime Learning Credit or American Opportunity Tax Credit or the 127, blah, blah, blah. So be cautious thinking that you're going to just be able to go to college and call it a business expense. Let's just say if there's another. Quick comment. We're going to have a baby girl this August. This is from AU325CI. I do think about property rental investment, but is there any other program like an IRA that I can deduct from my taxes and it grows tax-free as well? Can the baby have an IRA account, but she doesn't have any income either? That's a great question. The problem is that when your children are so young, under 6 or 7 years old, it's hard to create earned income. You may use them as a modeling fee strategy. Many of you have heard of that probably if you've been to any sort of creative self-directed IRA workshop. But here's my concern. Putting kids on payroll under age 6 or 7 definitely seems a little over the top. But that's where the Coverdell IRA comes in. You don't get a tax deduction, but it grows tax-free and comes out tax-free for college. You can self-direct it. And folks, over the next 2 weeks, you can put up to $4,000 in immediately in a self-directed Coverdell IRA, make it a partner in your next self-directed LLC, buy some real estate with it, get creative, and sometimes just a couple grand can be a great start with the Coverdell self-directed college IRA. Then down the road, you can use it for college. Once they are making earned income, maybe you go down a 529 route, maybe you buy some rental properties in their name. There's some other options down the road. Well, anyway, without any further ado, I want to bring our special guest on the show. We're so glad that he's found some time to be with us here. He's been on the show before. It got raving reviews and one of the most listened to podcasts last year. And so we're grateful to have him back. This is Harry Kisker. He's the Director of College Counseling for ESM Group Strategic College Counseling. He has served as the Dean of Student Affairs at Washington University in St. Louis, Director of College Counseling at the Collegiate School at Louisville, Kentucky. He's also been a member of the National Association of College Admissions Counselors for over a decade and has presented professional workshops at both the NACAC and the College Placement Council. So he's all about talking on this topic of college admissions processes, application strategies, and managing the cost of attending a university. So we are so grateful to have him here with us, a wealth of knowledge. Harry, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks very much, Mark. I've been listening to very closely, in fact, I wish I had known some of this stuff when my two kids were in college simultaneously. I have twin boys. Not all of these vehicles were around at that time, but I guess I just sailed in under the general assumption that I could rely on just the insights and generosity of colleges through their financial aid programs. Didn't realize that there was so much out there that I could have planned and maneuvered around and informed myself about. So it's been an eye-opener right there.
Well, I think anybody that has children, every day is an eye-opener, isn't it?
You're telling me.
Oh, my gosh. Well, no, Harry, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem.
Your patience as we, you know, a lot of these topics build up to having you here as our primary guest of the show for another 25 minutes. We're really excited about this because I want to just get it out there. And you said the word already, financial aid. So let's just tackle that quickly if we could. I know it's easier to get into college and that college is getting cheaper. But we'll come to that in a minute.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But let's talk
in your
about
dreams,
financial aid.
Mark.
Yeah, in my dreams. So talking about financial aid, where does that play into all this? Because you could be building up all this wealth in these IRAs and kids' money, and then you go to fill out the FAFSA form.
Well, there's a kind of a double-edged thing going on here. You have to be really careful, and there's a whole set of people who are kind of financial aid experts that you can use, consultants that are available to help a family that's interested in dollars that come through the college process, through the need-based process, or through the merit process. So, that in itself, you think the IRS is complicated. Well, you start trying to figure out college financial aid. That just gets really strange. And you said something a minute ago that I want to emphasize that everybody understands, is that specifically with financial aid and paying for college, specific needs, specific cases is the watchword of the day. You know, we can make generalities and general statements about what the broad lay of the land is, but it's going to come down to individual colleges that have individual policies and how they manage their financial aid or their merit aid awards, which is what we used to call scholarships back in the old days, for those kids who are particularly scholastically and academically attractive to a particular school. So, what people have to understand is that these colleges all operate under some general federal guidelines, but by and large, they have their own policies into what they're going to consider your family assets are. Some will consider equity at a home as a family asset that they expect you to spend down for college expenses. Others will exempt it. Only as qualified, really well-versed and experienced financial aid consultant is going to know which college does what. So that's just, this is to make a complicated situation sound even more complicated, but it's a good thing to know that there are resources available out there that can help a family figure out what they may get from one school in terms of what is sort of perceived financial need, right? And what they get from another may not be the same thing. They're not all operating under the same sort of sets of assumptions.
Well, and I think you highlight this same issue for tax planning because Matt Sorensen said, hey, you may get a tax deduction in Arizona,
right,
but you won't in California. And then when you go to financial aid, I go to one college and my kid gets financial aid, but then I go to another college and my kid gets nothing.
Right.
Where
do we go from here?
Yeah, and let me throw this out. We've already got a few questions that have come in on the chat line and via email for Mr. Kisker. So we'll come to those in a moment. And folks, if you do have a question for him, please type it in the chat line, or if you're calling in, you can press the number 1, and Lisa will bring you through the studio. So Harry, here's what I've heard many times before, and tell me if I'm wrong, is that a child should, of course, do the best they can in their education, be diversified, start filling out their applications, get the best test scores they can, fill out the applications early, be honing in on their essays in the summer and fall. We know about 6 months from now, 9 months from now, all the kids are going to be sending in their applications for this upcoming year. We can't wholly rely on, let me rephrase it in more summary here before I just throw out some dumb question. But when it comes to financial aid, we should really be thinking 2 to 3 years out at least. Am I not right?
Where people get in trouble is I think that families, because parents, particularly people who are needing financial aid, not the high-end folks who've already got money set aside or trust funds established or other kinds of tax vehicles that they began planning for years ago, but often people who are in the lower income brackets, or even what's left of our middle class, to try to finance what seems to be an increasingly expensive, you know, $200,000+ over 4 year cost, that they're going to face it only when everybody starts thinking about colleges, which is kind of typically in the middle of junior year of high school. That's too late, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a couple of things I would like to urge, both as a college counselor and as you know, as a sort of a financial aid person, is parents should discuss financial constraints or financial issues with their kids as early as possible. Because the biggest dilemma comes when parents feel awkward or they don't fill the kids in. You don't have to tell them everything. Yep. Because parents, there are things that the adults appreciate or understand better than the kids do. But if a kid is going to wind up in a situation where they are not going to be able to attend a particular college because the financial aid is not adequate or whatever, parents should discuss that with their kids early enough so that the kid doesn't get down the road someplace and really fall in love with Stanford or Harvard or Yale or Princeton or someplace that costs a fortune, and then only to be told, well, gee, you know, after they've been admitted, usually, we can't afford that. You know, that just causes a huge amount of problems in the family. So if the cost of education and the family constraints are kind of, you know, you don't have to scare the hell out of them, but just let them know what's going on and what you're concerned about so that they can assimilate that information and get a handle, too. You know, if you want to talk about, well, you know, we're thinking about even things like, you know, don't expect to live in the dorm for 4 years because we'd really like you to, we want to buy some rental properties and set you up a couple blocks from campus, you know, all of these things, let them participate. Make them part of the discussion as opposed to feeling like, well, you know, we're really, it's awkward, we feel bad that we can't do better, et cetera.
Yeah, and I know there's different cultures for different families where some kids they realize they're not going to get any help at all, and other families that kids just feel entitled and they're going to just have it all taken care of. And and both perspectives on the extremes might be sad in their own way, but I think this middle road is a wonderful advice, and that is keep the dialogue open. Expect something of your kids. Say maybe the first semester, I don't want you to work. I want you to just get familiar with the campus and have a good first semester and get used to the clubs and the classroom and the teachers. But you're going to pick up a job. And if you want spending money, you're going to get a job. And if you want to you come second year, I need some help with tuition. You're going to be working your summers in Alaska, stuffing salmon in a can or something, or, you know, who knows what it is. They're selling pest control door-to-door. But kids need to be involved in it. And I think the far, far majority of us do not have trust funds for their kids where they can tour Europe every summer between college semesters. So when it comes to financial aid, just one other question on this, and I do want to get into getting into college too, some of these important questions. But on the paying for college, when it comes time to fill out financial aid, should you choose 5 to 10 schools that your children are at least somewhat interested in and start contacting? Say you don't have the money even for a consultant to just come through and walk you through all this. What would be the general process that someone could follow that you think would be a good way to at least get started?
Well, I think by and large, people should consider, unless they are clearly so wealthy or economically well off that they know they're not ever going to get considered for any kind of financial aid, first thing they should do is check the financial aid box. Are you interested in need-based financial aid? Yes. And then worry about whether the school is or is not going to respond in some fashion with some form of a financial aid package. You know, this is a classic case of, you know, you can't play unless you, you know, put in a ticket. So you got to check off that you want to be considered for need-based financial aid. You should also understand, and this is available information on almost all of the college's websites, whatever time one of your kids says, okay, I'm interested in, Ohio Wesleyan, so go to the Ohio Wesleyan website and look for merit-based scholarship awards, meaning those that are not financial need dependent. And almost every college except a very small handful, there's only about 20, 25 colleges that do not give merit awards, and all of them are easily identified. It's the Ivies, the Little Ivies, Amherst, Williams, those kinds of places, and Stanford and a few others. There are even some schools that will consider making a merit-based award if the student is sufficiently attractive academically. What happens in most places is that the colleges are so anxious to get strong students that if your kid has decent plus, meaning relatively good SAT scores, relatively good GPA, there are plenty of good colleges. I'm not talking about the most prestigious colleges on the planet necessarily, but people have to remember that selectivity, meaning prestige, and quality are not the same thing. There's no automatic connection between someplace just because it has a 5% admit rate that it's offering fantastic everything. So there are plenty of places out there that have a much higher admit rate, and most colleges still admit between 50 and 75% of those who apply or more, right?
In
this competitive age, if a college is still running, if it still has its doors open, it's doing something right. So don't write off these places, folks. It's like, okay, you know, everybody wants to go to the most prestigious places, but the prestigious places are very expensive.
Well, I think this is, too, where kids need to have a reality check where it transfers at the second and third year into these more prestigious or larger schools is very, very common.
Very, very common, and a lot easier than coming in the front door.
Yeah, so many people think, oh, I've got to go to Stanford, or I've got to go to Ohio State or Alabama my first year as a freshman. And folks, you have to remind your kids they're going to be in classrooms with 200 to 300 other kids. They're going to feel like a number. There's a good chance they could have a much poorer academic experience and get very frustrated.
Right.
Let them cut their teeth at the junior high, at the junior college level. That's probably something you're not opposed to, right?
No, I think I wrote down a few ideas here beforehand, knowing that we were going to be chatting today. And one of the things that gets overlooked, because most people don't even think it's possible, is if you were to want to really save money on an Ivy degree or a very expensive school or a prestigious school and your kid is pretty talented, spend the first 2 years at a junior college. All they'll need to get in for the most part is a BB plus average for starters, so the admissions barrier is much lower, and you're paying 50% for the same degree.
Wow.
Right off the top. So you spend your first 2 years at
a junior
college.
This is Rudy Rudiger, right?
Huh?
This is Rudy Rudiger. Rudy Rudiger.
you betcha.
Yeah.
And it doesn't say when you get your Cornell diploma, Cornell, 2 years, and also from. It says Cornell at the end. That's it. That's your bachelor's degree. And if they ask you, they want to know where did you get your bachelor's degree, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know why people don't do that more. We've got a system that's created for that here in this country. And people, I know why they don't do it more. You were talking about the kids who want to go to these places. It's also the parents who don't. They want to have the right sticker in the back window. There you go.
I love it when there's a comedian. I don't know if I can do it justice, but it's so funny where he's like, he goes, there's the kid you ask, hey, where are you going to college? Oh, I'm going to UCLA. Oh, okay, great. And then you go, you ask another kid, so where are you going to college? Well, I'm putting a couple years in over here at this JC, and then I'm going to be going to UCLA. And you a much longer story, And some people don't like to give that story, but they're in the long run, they could very well be the smart one, folks. Financial aid. I think this is an important point: is that financial aid is not always someone writing you a check. It just means that you can get student loans. Maybe a grant if you're lucky. So when you say, oh, I checked the box for financial aid, I got a bunch of financial aid. Yeah, all you got was a loan package. And now your kids are going to come out of college in this six-figure debt, where if they could have spent a couple years at junior college, you could cut that debt in half.
Yep.
It's just outrageous.
I just think the people who are serious about wanting to provide excellent educational opportunities for their kids, regardless of their income level, ought to take a look at this two-year college, four-year college link, because it just doesn't make any sense to, sure, we'd love to send our kid to a four-year college where they don't have to worry about, having to make new friends and transfer and all that kind of stuff. But in the end, if you want the benefit of a strong four-year education that has the basics taken care of in one place and major concentration in the two upper-class years in another place. Here in California, for example, the entire California system is based on transfer from two-year colleges.
Oh, yeah, it's just phenomenal. It really is. I was just driving by some of the UC schools along the coast this weekend with our family on a trip, and it's just amazing what great schools there are. Now, we've got a couple questions here.
Sure.
We've got
a
live caller. Excuse me, a live caller. Before I put you on the spot here, one of the questions we had is, I'm just going to throw it out there. This online listener said, we missed the WUE pricing for Boise State University. The WUE is a modified tuition payment pricing structure. The deadline was December 15th, 2013. Harry, are you familiar with this? And do you have any thoughts on the WUE? Does that mean anything to you? It doesn't to me. I apologize.
Well, I can't remember exactly what the acronym stands for, but it's basically a Western Consortium Agreement between a number of Western states, including, I think, Arizona, California, Utah, et cetera, Nevada, that there is a reduced tuition rate for if any in-state kid from any of these places goes to a school somewhere else amongst the consortium.
Oh, okay. So if I live in Idaho, or sorry, this person says they may be living in Utah, but they want to go to Boise State University. And if they're
right.
part of this WUE program, they can say, oh, I want
right.
in-state tuition at Boise State, even though I'm not from that state, and they'll get it.
Right. There is a deadline, yes.
Yeah.
However, I think they probably ought to talk to, if the kid really is interested and committed, to see if somebody at Boise State is going to be willing to overlook that deadline. I don't remember very many instances in my experience where folks missed the deadlines, for starters. And then if that doesn't happen, I would certainly ask, because financial aid is normally, and tuition bills normally come annually, if they've, you know, they're not locked out for 4 years, I hope. But then if they can discuss or settle or try to arrange with the people at Boise State that next year, if they have to pay the full freight for an out-of-state person for the first year, that they don't have to do that for the remaining three.
Yeah. No. Thank you for those thoughts. I learned something new there, too. And folks, some of you that are worried about out-of-state tuition might want to look at some of these, quote-unquote, consortiums. It sounds like it's on the West
right.
Coast. WUE. Google that for WUE Modified Tuition Program.
Right.
Let's go over to our live caller now. His name is Mark as well. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. How you doing, man?
Hey, thanks so much for calling in. I understand you're kind of up against the wall here, too, with some juniors as I am, too. I got twins that are juniors. what's your situation? Go ahead.
Just one for me. It's actually my fiance's daughter. She is a junior in high school this year. However, there was no planning done prior to me coming into the picture. And the company that I work for actually have a good program that gets parents ready ahead of time. But I wanted to find out from both of you what your recommendations would be in terms of immediate next steps and what we would want to look at.
In terms of college application or financial aid?
Financial aid.
Financial aid, okay. I would suggest a couple of things. One is to, because the ways of getting financial aid, meaning money coming in to, you know, sort of chip away at the total costs, are pretty diverse. One is to start checking on websites that provide lists of scholarship opportunities. Many of these are not huge. Some are pretty hefty, several, you know, $20,000, $30,000 in one chunk. Those are pretty competitive, and your kid's got to be pretty strong. But there are also others that are smaller, and those also that are local for particular regions. You know, the local garden club offers a $1,000 scholarship to a kid who just has to write an essay and have certain very relatively minimum academic requirements. There are, I know, tons of people who, and these have been kids themselves, because they've been motivated and energetic and ambitious, just labor over these websites and manage to put together several, you know, $12,000, $14,000, $15,000 worth of small scholarships.
Wow.
that they've gathered. 500 here, 1,000 there, 2,500 there. It's out there. It's amazing. The other is to start early by going to, if the child is interested in particular colleges, almost all, everything that a college offers, particularly merit aid, and then financial aid procedures are explained on their website.
Okay.
So while the kid is looking at the dorms and the social life and the majors that they, he or she might want, mom and dad ought to be looking at the financial aid prospects and the application deadlines and the kind of paperwork that's going to be required.
Also, if I could interject here too, Mark, I think this is a great opportunity to sit down with the junior and say, hey, we are committed to higher education. We want you to go to college. What college would be your perfect ideal world? And they may say a big top 10 tiered school or a Big Ten school or East Coast SEC school or whatever, one of these beautiful state powerhouses, and say, okay, right, that's, now let's figure out how to get there. Why don't we do a year at the local junior college, and let's also start working on some of these scholarships, and let's talk about your workload. What can you handle with your employment? Should we have a small business aspect? Should we look at rental property? And let's put together kind of a package here, and really, really involved. And I'm just stealing some of Harry's verbiage here earlier, but get the kid involved. That's what I'm doing with my teenagers right now, because I'm trying to give them a very rude awakening, but giving them hope and saying, here's how we're going to get there.
Yes. Yeah, rude awakening seems to be the theme.
Well, kids don't generally start thinking about this stuff, and hardly ever in most families, that somebody's got to pay the bills. This doesn't happen, just by falling in their lap. So, adults have a different perspective. We've worked for a living. We know what it means to generate a certain amount of income, et cetera. So, but that's part of becoming an adult, and it's part of the transition from being a kid, from coming out of high school, and being a starting adult from college on, although sometimes people would say that college kids are not really anywhere close to adults in acting anyway. So anyhow, good luck with that.
Great. Thank you very much, Harry.
I hope you have some help there and get started.
Yeah, thank you, Mark, for the call. Thank you. Good luck. Harry, just with 1 minute left here, I'd like to have you give out your contact info here shortly, but managing the cost of education, I alluded to it, you have to, that it can be a six-figure debt load with a kid coming out of college. You've mentioned cutting the cost through attending junior colleges early on. Any other ideas on managing the cost of college?
Well, I think you put your finger on one that's very important. And it came up through the real estate concept business in the earlier conversation on the program. I've known tons of people who have been very smart by buying real estate property, basically lopping a huge chunk off the costs of their kids' housing for 4 years. By the time kids are sophomores, they really want to get out of the dorms anyway. So even if you buy just a house, not an apartment place, but just a house, the kid can always manage it. The kid can find roommates or fraternity brothers or sorority sisters who can occupy all the bedrooms, so you're producing money. And in the end, you have something to sell instead of just a pile of bills.
No, that's a great comment. We had a live caller, too, a listener that said, look at college as your first real job and the professors and teachers as your employer, the classwork and projects as what you were and are going to be employed to do in the future.
Yep.
Great comments from everyone here. And
that's excellent.
Harry, and I appreciate you coming on. Please tell us how more people can get a hold of you and your counseling services and what you do.
Okay. I do general college counseling, meaning everything from A to Z about the college process, particularly the strategies for getting into very competitive schools, which only get more competitive as I just looked at the figures for this year and almost choked. Available email at hkisker, K-I-S-K-E-R, hkisker, all one word, lowercase, at esmcollege.com. ESM as in Michael, college.com. And I work out of my office in Petaluma, California, and I'm available via Skype and other things to people just about anywhere.
Well, I love it. Excellent. And folks, in next week's newsletter, I'll highlight our prior week's show with Harry's contact information as well. And Gosh, wealth of information. Harry, thanks so much for joining us. I really
appreciate it. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's fun.
It is. Thank you. And good luck with those twins yourself.
Thanks. See you.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us this week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.